I'm just going to read a few poems from the book. As I've said lately, I'm writing this new book. I only recently started calling it a book. This seems a little hubristic, and I might be a little superstitious. But the more time that I spend with this book, I likened it recently to like going home to your mama, where you're like, this is maybe not the right crowd for it. where you're like, oh, I miss my mama. And then you go home, and you're like, wait. Like, I love my mom, but the whole like spending time together thing, you know? So that's kind of how I feel about this book. This book has like literally taken me around the world. I'm very, very grateful to it. But I can't spend a lot of time with it because it's keeping me from other things. So I'm just gonna read a few poems. Thank you for being here tonight also. There are a lot of things that you could be doing, a lot of choices you can make in the world, and akin to what Stephanie said, it matters greatly that you're here. So thank you. The only thing you need to know really about this book is that when I first started writing it, I just moved from California to Salt Lake City, Utah, and was having that kind of time with it. And I had never been landlocked before, and I had never seen it snow. There's snow in the west, and there's snow in the east, and there's snow in our beds icing the cabbage. Since you left me alone, the wasp nest swallowing the bulb in the porch light has gone leaden, and each night the asphalt is honeycombed in its half-lidded light, while the laundry, frozen stiff on the line, sways from its moon flag that waves without wind. I'm not praying, I'm longing, please. Let summer be a good shot, an untraceable track. Let the beautiful animal of this working class winter loose its vice grip on your throat before the kill. The kettle is steaming the windows, lined with bubble wrap, and the peaches are ripening in their cans. Come home, come home. I'm gonna jump around really briefly. It's gonna feel a little jolty. Are y'all with me? Just like sort of, you know, greatest hits. It's like, we were talking earlier, I think it kind of psyched me out, actually. We had a conversation earlier in Casey's class about like reading the room and about how you make decisions about like what you'll read and for how long you'll read and changing our minds mid-reading, and for sure I won't end up reading what I plan to. Probably because of how you're looking at me. And thinking about it on the way over here, I was like, what am I doing? And then to see so much kin in the room is like this, like I'm like, forget it, I just want to read all the gay poems. So I might just read all the gay poems. Sorry. This is the poem that I don't read anymore. It's called On Nights When I Am Your Husband. This poem I don't read anymore, one, because when I first wrote it, legislation in this country was different. And so we are very literally living through the changes of our time. But also because like I'm married, and also, you know, marriage as an institution doesn't make anybody free. So, well, that wasn't as funny, was it? On nights when I am your husband, this is my favorite poem to read when I go home to Salt Lake City. On nights when I am your husband, it takes until morning to realize everyone thinks I am the man you sleep beside at night and scold in daylight for toilet seats or beard clippings, the man you chose to bring home bacon and fry it, or otherwise participate in satisfying strange chauvinistic proverbs involving pigs. Sometimes all it takes is a tie, but more often a suit, to bind our twosome into something altogether common. You in your hourglass and heels, me in my narrow pleats. I wouldn't call our camouflage deliberate. I wouldn't wake with recognition if it were. But on nights when I am your husband and the elderly woman at the symphony pats my hand and calls me son, I wish I knew how to be that man, if just for an instant. I wish I knew to turn to you with the veneration of a spouse, to feel the law make firm the ground beneath my knees as your brilliance pulls me to them. Love, I will have you and hold you for all of my days. But on those nights, let the whole house know it with their failure to notice. Let their oversight be our refuge. and let the privilege of our brief ruse unite us as some shared reverie would when morning finally comes. Hard turn. during the reading year of my PhD, I didn't grow up reading dead white dudes. I grew up in the Bay Area in like a working class aesthetic, and dead white guys were like the last people I wanted to fall in love with on the page. And so during my PhD, to become enamored with John Donne was just, having come up in spoken word and like performance poetics and so on and so forth, like John Donne was like, no, please, anybody but Donne. But John Donne is like kind of a cool guy. And he's like really going through it. And he's writing the Holy Sonnets. His wife's about to die. He doesn't know that he's about to die. Like, everything's rough. He's having to like change his religion. Everybody's mad at him. And he questions God like all of the time. And then he wrote this great sonnet called Better My Heart, Three Person God. And I'm like, whoa, three person God, that's so queer. Like, I haven't really been that gay in a long time. And so wanted to bring John Donne to the deaf community. You wanted to bring, not that they didn't have John Donne, but you know what I mean, like make John Donne matter in a different way to deaf folks. And then also I was working with young folks at the time in high schools, and they were like very skeptical. But this is sort of my effort toward that. And it's until recently, actually, it was a poem for which I had received the most hate mail. And you don't think that that's going to be a thing when you become a poet, right? You don't think like, oh yes, and I will receive lots of hate. But shocking amounts. People have a lot of time on their hands. They could be writing poems. It's called Better My Heart, Transgender God. Better my heart, transgender God, for yours is the only ear that hears. Place fear in my heart, where faith has grown my senses dull and reassures my blood that it will never spill. Show every part to every stranger's anger. Surprise them with my drawers full up of maps that lead to vacancies and chart the distance from my pride. My core, terror, do not depart, but nest in the hollows of my loins and keep me on all fours. My knees bring me to them. Force my head to bow again. Replay the murders of my kin until my mind's made new. Let Adam's bite obstruct my breath till I respire men and press his rib against my throat until my lips turn blue. You, O duo, O twin, whose likeness is kind, unwind my confidence and noose it round your fist so I might know you in vivid impermanence. We could do worse. How y'all doing? We're gonna make it. Yeah. Come from a culture of call and response, so that's not gonna be the last time I check in with you. This is a warning. You're doing okay so far. I give you about a C+. I'm gonna read some new work because it seems appropriately scary, and also the whole mama thing. This poem has an epigraph from James Baldwin. Y'all reading Baldwin? Y'all need to get your lives right. You need to be reading James Baldwin.
There should have been a class,
yeah. Yes, right? There'll be a test at the end. So the epigraph comes from an interview that James Baldwin did in the late 60s, and the interviewer asks, has being gay been a disadvantage? And Baldwin, he's in this like spinny chair, right? And he just sort of, he like very slowly turns around. He's like, it's like a very office moment, right into the camera. He's like, no, I've really hit the jackpot. Portrait of myself as Samson and Delilah. I am the woman about whom my mother warned me, dangerous and Philistine. I have tempted truth into the honeyed light of day from the thorax of a lion and fed it with my fists into sorrowed mouths whose fertile worry hives in the ears of girls like vagrant dayflies to keep them from slumber that might steal their hair. Some of us were born supernatural. Some of us wake to find the secrets we shared were daydreams instead, pollinated by fear. I need not say I killed the lion. I need only remember the sweetness of surprise in place of my mane. Let me introduce you to daylight. It was my hands that held the shear, my mouth the comb. I have never been unclean. Pull the pillows down around my chest at the first sign of daybreak and tuck me into that blanket of stone. Oh, that you would make me feeble, asleep upon your knee, that I was born to love this weakness as I do the noonday shade. Cup your hand to the stubble of my skull, the sticky underneath. Out of the eater, something to eat, and out of the strong, something gentler still. Every day I wake, still warm and breathing. I never mourn the muscle lost. Forget foxes or flame. I am the sun, about whom my lover was warned, would feed the night today. Run! We were joshing on you earlier, Ron. All good things. So I'm just going to read a few poems from a series that I'm working on. It's not really a series, that's a lie. It's a group of poems that sort of relates to a conversation we were briefly having earlier today about this idea of like being a deaf poet and working in English and working with the assumption that my audiences are hearing. For a long, long time, I've bent myself into pretzels trying to appeal to the hearing ear. And it's taken many forms. It's involved memorizing hearing rhymes and like trying to figure out what it is that sounds good to y'all, which is not as simple as it seems, right? It's not just like cat, bat, rat. It's like y'all, I mean, like y'all are picky. It's like there are vowels and there are rhymes, but then also what are they called? Diphthongs? Yeah. Right? So like if you can't hear vowels and then you want to put two vowels together at once, that's rude. That's incredibly rude. But I spent much of my, I guess, formal training as a poet trying to figure out how to sound good to y'all. And there are lots of things that play there, right? But primarily, they are, one, I assume my audience is hearing. And so what kind of space does that leave for deaf kin in the world? And then also, like, what does that do to somebody's poetics after a decade, right? A decade of, like, trying to be somebody that you're not, or trying to amend yourself in a way that appeals to people who oppress you on the daily? It's a very bizarre decision to make, don't you think? It's like, let's hurt on purpose. And so a lot of this project book, a lot of this book, has to do with sort of trying to figure out how to rectify that and how to make amends with myself, with my community. What kind of coming home will that involve? Is it possible? Can you be a part of American poetics and be deaf? I mean, I can count how many of us there are that are deaf and writing in English on one hand. So I was curious, and we'll see what happens. But these next few poems have to do specifically with that. This one's called Elegy in Translation, and it's actually a contrapuntal poem, so it's a term that, I know I'm chattering a lot, give me a second. Contrapuntal is a term that we steal from music and just like bastardize, where you can read the poem down. Usually appears in two columns. You can read both columns individually as single poems. You can read them from top to bottom and then top to bottom as one another poem. And then you can also read them straight across. So it's like a really, really wonderful crossword puzzle. And the only thing that you need to know is that the second half of the acrostic is written in ASL, and I won't be signing it tonight. Elegy in Translation. Forgive me my deafness now, for your name on others' lips. Each mouth gathers, then opens, and I search for the wave the fluke of their tongue should make With the blow of your name in that mild darkness, I recognize but cannot explain as the same oblivious blue of hold the conch to your ear and hearing the highway loud and clear. My hands are bloated with the name signs of my kin who have waited for water to reach their ears, or oil, grease from a fox with the gall of a hare, bear fat melted in hot piss, peach kernels fried in hog lard and tucked along the cavum for a cure, a sharp stick even, a jagged rock, anything to wedge down deep to the drum inside that kept them walking away from wives, old or otherwise, and the tales they tell about our being too broken for their bearing, and yet they bear on, down. Forgive me my deafness from my own sound, how I mistook it for a wound you could heal. Forgive me the places your wasted words could have saved us from going had I heard you with my hands. I saw Joni live and still thought a gay pair of guys put up a parking lot. How could I have known you are worthless? Sounds like, should we do this? Even with the lights on, you let me say yes. So what if Johnny Nash can see clearly now Lorraine is gone? I only wanted to hear the sea. The audiologist asks, does it seem like you're underwater? And I think only of your name. I thought it was you after I love, but memory proves nothing save my certainty. The chapped round of your mouth was the same shape, while at rest, or in thought, or blowing smoke, and all three make a similar sound. The poem takes its title from a piece by Louise Bourgeois. Do you know this artist? I was abroad on the Amy Lowell Traveling Scholarship for the calendar year of 2016, and the Lowell is a scholarship. They give one American poet a year, and they give you a chunk of change, and the only rules are that you have to exit the continent of North America for 365 consecutive days. You can't come home. And I don't like to be told what to do. So it was a little bit of a rough year for that and other reasons. But Louise Bourgeois was like, no matter what country, I went to like 17 or 18 countries in a year, and no matter what country I went to, there was Louise Bourgeois, not literally the old lady, but the artist and her work. And the piece from which this title takes its name, 10 a.m. is When You Come to Me, it's like this huge, like the size of this wall, of panels of prints with hands on them. And it got me thinking a lot about what it is to reclaim language through visuals and what it means to be an artist who uses parts of the body that are very literally the mouth and communication point of my lineage. And thinking about that differently and how it alters the ways in which we are able to have lives. So this is 10 a.m. is when you come to me. In some other life, I can hear you breathing, a pale sound like running fingers through tangled hair. I dreamt again of swimming in the quarry and surfaced here when you called for me in a voice only my sleeping self could know. Now the dapple of the aspen respires on the wall and the shades cut its song a staff of light. Leave me, that me, in bed with the woman who said all the sounds for pleasure were made with vowels I couldn't hear. Keep me instead with this small sun that sips at the sky blue hem of our sheets, then dips and reappears, a drowsy penny in the belt of Venus, your aureole nodding slow and copper as it bobs against cotton in cornflour or clay. What a waste the groan of the mattress must be when you backstroke into me and pull the night up over our heads. Your eyes are two moons I float beneath, and my lungs fill with a wet hum, your hips return. It's Sunday, or so you say, with both hands on my chest, and hot breath is the only hymn whose refrain we can recall. And then you reach for me like I could have been another man. You make me sing without a sound. I'm just gonna read a few more. Y'all good with that? How you feeling, Marty?
Good.
Good. All right, we're good. This poem really is from a series. It's not a lie. Are y'all reading Gabrielle Cavacaresi? Just Marty. One more time with the James Baldwin. Are y'all taking notes? James Baldwin. Gabby Cavacaresi. Gabby's got a new book out called Rocket Fantastic. It's a lot of that. Rocket Fantastic is what it's called. And in it, Gabby uses, instead of pronouns, uses like this, I'm going to butcher this too, but it's like a musical insignia. Yeah, it's like a symbol. I don't really know what it means. So has swapped pronouns for like a symbol. And Gabby invites you to read it however you want to read it, but when Gabby reads, Gabby uses the insignia as a place to inhale. So it'll be like, and then after dinner, went to the park. Right? That's not really a line from the book. But so it's fascinating, right? It's like, oh my gosh, gender projected as space, as breath, as I suppose sound. And so it got me thinking about, I'm often thinking about closed captioning. You know, happens like at the bottom of your screen. It's one of those like use it or lose it kinds of things. So if y'all could turn on closed captioning, like on Netflix, I would appreciate it. But there's that moment with closed captioning where it says inaudible. Mm-hmm. And so it's like this visual marker of a sound. It's trying to detail for you a sound that they can't, that you can't understand what the sound is. Do you get the eye? Okay. Anyway, so I've sort of, in the spirit of Gabby's work, I'm writing this series that includes inaudible in a variety of ways, in brackets. And this is Portrait of My Gender as Inaudible. And I think I'll only read two more, if that feels good. You ready?
Yeah, totally.
Portrait of My Gender as... I knew I was a god when you could not agree on my name. And still none you spoke could force me to listen closer. Is this the nothing the antelope felt when Adam lit on his own entitling dubbed family, genus, species? So many descendants became doctors, delivered babies, bestowed bodies, names, as if to say it is to make it so. Can it be a comfort between us, the fact of my creation? I was made in the image of a thing without an image. And silence, too, is your invention. Who prays for a god except to appear with answers, but never a body, a voice? If I told you, you wouldn't believe me because I was the one to say it. On the first day, there was no sound worth mentioning. If I, too, am a conductor of air, the only praise I know is in stereo, one pair, an open hand and closed fist. Will have to do. I made a photograph of my name. There was a shadow in a field, and I put my shadow in it. You can't hear me, but I'm there. And I think this last poem I'm gonna read is a poem that I wrote while I was living abroad. I was living in Malta at the time, and y'all know where Malta is. I did not tell it. It was a strange time. You know, like 2016 was an election year, and as always, there was a refugee crisis, but there was sort of an excess of refugee movement about the planet. And Malta is this place that has experienced incredible violence and just sort of left it as an archive and built around it. And so I did feel... incredibly out of sorts while living there. It was unlike anything I'd ever experienced in my life, which is only a sign of my privilege. And I felt so distant from sort of like the ways in which I dig into writing, which is usually through place, that the only thing I could write about was outer space. And so I was reading a lot about planets and collapsing dwarf stars, and I was like, oh yes, right, that's me. It was a very difficult time, but around this time is when Pluto was sort of like half re-inducted, where it was like, oh, people are really cranky, so I guess you can be a planet. And I remember being in Malta and reading that news and being like, of course, like the world is trash. So this is for Pluto and also for my kin in the room. Thank you all so much. You've been so, so kind. If you're staying, I'll stay too. Maybe it's easier having been named after someone. Nobody expects that you'll rule the underworld or judge the dead, but they call you Pluto anyway. Planet too. I know a girl like you who used to be a thing she isn't anymore, but hasn't changed at all. Whose orbit didn't circle straight, whose size and distance never quite seemed right, but no one cared till now. I was a woman once, rounded by my own gravity, catcalled into Hades by men who could not see this gem of a hard rock was not made magnetic for the likes of them. Hey, little mama, don't take it so hard. So we are frigid. So we stay relegated out here with our kin. I'll wear my fade tight and my tie loose if you play your radio loud. They say we're known only in comparison to that which surrounds us, so I guess they'll hear our signal soon. I was a woman once, but that's not the farthest thing from the sun another universe might have let me be. Another universe might have let us be. Thank you all. Yeah.